Blog Talk Radio.
Gets me ready every time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in to Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com. And right here with me, I got James Foley of Bad Left Hook. James.
Patrick.
Oh, it's good to have you back, man. It's good
it's an honor to be back. And I want to apologize about last week again.
Oh, man. It was tough. I'm not going to lie, man. It was tough. And there were a number of subjects that I had to ramble on about that I kind of wish I had you for, because people probably needed to hear something other than me, you know, just verbally spewing shit. So, yeah, glad to have you back.
Well, I can't even
Plus,
remember what happened
shit to talk about
in boxing that you were talking about. But, so luckily it wasn't, you know. So, yeah, I think it must have been extra tough.
There was nothing to recap. It was literally all, it was all me setting up for Jean Pascal versus Lucien Boutte, and that was, like, pretty much it. That was all that was going on. And then I had to make up some shit, so whatever.
Your usual lies and rumors and innuendo.
Yep, that's pretty much all I do.
All right.
But, dude, there's just so much boxing to talk about this week. We need to dive right in. We can't waste time, dude. We can't waste time bullshitting about Adrian Broner's next sex tape or him making up with his baby mama. We don't have time to bullshit about stuff like that. We also don't have time to bullshit about, let's see what, Bradley Pacquiao 2. We don't have time. Oh, no. That's exactly what I was doing, was bullshitting about it. I'm assuming,
well, we got,
I'm assuming
you
watched the fights on HBO at least.
I did. I don't know why, but I did. But yeah, of course, I watched the HBO fights. Although I got to be honest, man, I was having kind of a tough time staying attentive during the heavyweight fight. Although it did get better in the last half, I guess. But I don't think that was HBO's finest offering. Hopefully, it'll end up being one of their weakest by the end of the year. I thought the whole card was kind of disappointing, to be honest.
You know, I don't know exactly what it was that HBO paid for the card or what the purses were. I honestly have absolutely no idea. But my guess is that they were probably banking on a pretty, you know, wide viewership,
yeah.
At least in Canada. So I really don't know if it was a financial success or anything. But, yeah, it in terms of entertainment, it just kind of wasn't. I don't even know if you could say
it
fell short of expectations, because I didn't expect a whole ton in terms of entertainment.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I was, like, only looking forward to it because it was kind of the first major card of the year, you know, the first premium network championship edition or whatever. But, yeah, it was kind of a letdown. But, yeah, I guess I didn't really have too high of expectations. Was just kind of hoping that maybe, you know, organically something cool would break out and happen. And yeah, I guess the highlight of the whole event was maybe the last couple rounds of the main event, with Boutte actually rallying and throwing some punches and kind of looking alive for the first time in the whole fight. But
at least that was something. You know, I didn't really see that coming at all. Even though it was clear that Pascal was, you know, getting winded right there in the last few rounds, I didn't really think that Boutte would do anything, so I was kind of surprised he stepped up at all.
Mm. That's a good point, although Pascal was letting him do that to set up the rematch, right?
Of course. That's all about is the rematch of that fight.
Which isn't that bad of a thing if that happens, but only because maybe, you know, hopefully that spares us from having to watch Adonis Stevenson fight Pascal.
I mean, I'm sure that would be a huge matchup in Canada and whatnot, but if Adonis Stevenson comes out like he's been fighting in the last year plus, I don't really see Jean Pascal lasting through that. But let me ask you, before we know anything about the numbers, about what happened with Pascal Boutte, or whether, yeah, well, we already know it was a success because it filled an arena with more than 20,000 people. But before we know anything about the TV stuff, would you say that the hype was warranted? You know, would you say that all the stuff we heard about it being the Canadian Super Bowl and, you know, all that type of bull jive, was that warranted?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it didn't feel that like that either, you know, from just the perspective of I mean, we've seen a lot of these HBO shows now. Like, we weren't there, obviously, but, you know, you see on TV, and a lot of times you can tell when there's a really special atmosphere. I mean, it's a lot easier when you're at the fight, but even through TV, like when Martinez fought down in Argentina, I mean, you could tell there was just crazy shit going on, you know, and there's so many people, and this just didn't feel like that to me, you know. Maybe it was just because there wasn't much of an undercard, and we only saw the second fight, and neither of those guys really has any appeal with Canadian audiences, so you didn't have the kind of the build up. But it just didn't feel like any kind of a significant event in terms of just from what I was seeing. I mean, yeah, the arena was full, but I didn't think the crowd was any more lively. You know, it was above average or anything like that. And you know, the thing is, if you look at the two fighters, I mean, I think now, I don't know, I mean, neither of the guys is really, the bottom line is, like, since Boutte got pretty much destroyed by Frotch, and that was at 168, where, you know, Boutte was one of the top contenders for a couple years, and Pascal, you know, lost to Hopkins in the way that he did. Although, to Pascal's credit, he was closer against Hopkins than some of the other guys, like Tavoris Cloud and what's his name, Murat. So, I mean, yeah, Pascal's like a top 10 light heavyweight, and Boutte's not really a top challenge, you know, top challenger there. But neither of these guys is the best guy in their division, and you know, Canada right now has a guy, Adonis Stevenson, who is the legitimate champion and one of the best fighters at 175. So, no, I don't think this matchup, I mean, yeah, it was probably a little bit overhyped just on, you know, it's two of the biggest Canadian stars of the last few years. And they do have great followings. I mean, they drew 20,000 people. But I think it did lack some intensity because of the fact that we weren't seeing even these two guys at their best, and we also weren't seeing, you know, two of the best fighters in the world or at a weight against each other. So it was kind of a gimmick matchup just based on the name, you know, the name recognition and the star power in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the hype, I think it was, or at least it seemed fairly clear to me that it was big, and then people seemed to be anticipating it, and they seemed to be fairly excited about it for the most part. But yeah, it didn't really strike me as an overly lively arena or anything like that. And yeah, I mean, the action itself was a bit of a letdown, even in the face of knowing going in that, number one, Jean Pascal has been inactive, and number two, Lucien Boutte has already kind of been dismantled enough, or at least sufficiently, that we're perhaps not really looking at him as a top fighter anymore already. And that was going into the fight. That was before we even did anything. So, yeah, it was kind of tough to really get excited about it past what you said, which was that it's the first kind of bigger card of 2014. So, yeah, I think we were all looking forward to it if for, you know, only that reason.
Yeah, you know, and it's just the light heavyweight division is so clear right now in terms of just Stevenson's the guy at the top, and then you have this really exciting, you know, destructive challenger in Kovalev right there behind him, and that's the fight that really needs to happen from the boxing fan point of view, you know. And then if you want to throw kind of an interesting curveball, I mean, yeah, okay, Bernard Hopkins is still campaigning in the division, and he could definitely beat some guys, and you know, neither Stevenson or Kovalev is really that proven when you really look at the resumes. So I guess Hopkins is still kind of an interesting, you know, counterpoint. But beyond those three fighters, I mean, you can't sell Pascal as being like a top, you know, a guy there. I mean, I know he beat Dawson a few years ago and, you know, got that kind of legitimate light heavyweight championship, although it was vacant at the time, and him and Dawson were number one and number two in the ring, and that's why that happened. And of course, that's, you know, he gave that championship to Hopkins. But it's just the 50-year-old Hopkins at light heavyweight. You see what happens with him and Chad Dawson. You know, you see what happens with Chad Dawson and Andre Ward. You just know there's a higher caliber of fighters that are out there. And Pascal, who won this fight, he's pretty far down the list of really relevant, you know, guys in that landscape, 168, 175. I mean, I don't want to see Andre Ward go up and fight Pascal. You know, I don't really care to see Stevenson fight Pascal. I mean, if Stevenson's going to fight four times a year and Pascal's one of them, then, you know, that's okay. But I would hate to think that, you know, a guy like Kovalev would get lost in the mix there because he doesn't have the same kind of financial pull behind him as, you know, some of the other fighters.
Well, speaking of which, since he did win, as somewhat uneventful as the fight was, how do you think Jean Pascal would fare against a Sergey Kovalev, you know, Adonis Stevenson? How do you think would he survive?
He might. I mean, I'd like to see the other, you know, the kind of top guys all fight each other. But, yeah, I mean, Pascal's definitely right there in that next group. And I guess if they have to fight somebody, right? And, you know, Stevenson, the rumor is that he was going to fight Fanfara next, you know, from my hometown of Chicago. And which, by the way, I'm picking Stevenson to KO him in about 15 seconds. But... You know, like, so Pascal's definitely a worthy challenger in that sense, in terms of compared to the other guys like Fanfara. I mean, he's more accomplished than they are. And so, yeah, he'll probably get a crack at Stevenson and, you know, Kovalev, somebody, whoever the guy is there. But I don't know, can he win the fight or can he be competitive? I don't really think so. I think he could survive because he seems to, you know, to be somewhat durable, but it's hard to say. You know, he hasn't really fought guys who have that kind of power. Stevenson and Kovalev are such big punchers. You know, I don't know if anybody. That's why I just want to see them fight each other. You know, and then we can think about who they should fight next.
Well, I have two questions before we finish out.
What about you? Do you think Pascal's can be competitive with? I mean, I kind of look at those Hopkins fights like that was the ceiling. You know.
Yeah, I would say I thought that he did a little bit better on the scorecards than the actual scorecard said in the first Hopkins fight. I thought that Pascal showed, well, that's kind of his entire career. Like, that one fight right there also was kind of a microcosm for his entire career. In flashes, he showed that he's extremely quick, he's really explosive, he's got decent punching power when he really puts weight into his shots. You know, he can put some nice combinations together. He's tricky. He's tough to catch at times, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then he takes rounds off. He takes, you know, the first 2.5 minutes of a round off, or he takes the last 2 minutes or whatever the case may be. It's really spotty, and that's exactly how his career has been in the last few years too. Mm-hmm. So I can't really bring myself to, of course, I wouldn't favor him against any of those guys like Stevenson or Kovalev in particular, especially because they're big punchers and Pascal seems to be a bit more easily caught. If you put, assuming that either Kovalev or Stevenson would have been in a similar position against Pascal in the 10th or 11th round as Boutte was, like, put either of those guys in that position and I'm 100% confident that both of them would have knocked Jean Pascal out. You know, he could have been all about, you know, messing around or trying to draw him in for a rematch or whatever the hell. He would have been knocked out. And he's lucky that Boutte can't really punch at 175, it seems. I mean, he seemed to have kind of a stiff punch, but not anything past that. So, you know, the inactivity and the issues with stamina and endurance, I don't see it. Maybe early, if he could try to really just finish one of them off or something like that, maybe. other than that, I don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He's kind of a goofball too. You know, like just some of the way that he fought against Hopkins, like you said. I mean, I think you got to give Pascal a lot of credit for beating Chad Dawson. You know, and that fight, he really it wasn't really a fight that played out in terms of, like, you know, it wasn't a chess match. It wasn't like a technical boxing match. I mean, he really went, you know, Dawson was totally listless and for some reason just, you know, was kind of out of it, wasn't throwing punches, and Pascal really took advantage of that. And at the time, it was a huge fight because it was two, I think, young, both undefeated guys, or maybe Pascal had the one loss. But, you know, it was a huge fight for the light heavyweight championship, and Pascal showed up and you know, really fought his ass off, and Dawson didn't. So give him credit for that. But the two fights with Hopkins definitely showed, and they were close fights. I mean, they weren't, you know, the first was a draw, and, you know, the second one, I think Hopkins won narrowly. But Pascal won, you know, at least four or five rounds in each of those fights and had a, you know, had a case to win, I guess, although I prefer Hopkins. But they did show that, you know, he did take just takes rounds off late, and, like, for whatever reason, I mean, when you're the one having stamina issues against a guy who's almost 50 and just letting Hopkins kind of do what he did, and then when we saw how easily Chad Dawson just kind of going through the motions, shadow boxing, you know, outpointed Bernard Hopkins in the next fight, I mean, I think it really took a lot of, you know, a lot off of Pascal in terms of, you know, his reputation and how good that he could be or whatever, and then the fact that he's taken time off and he had some weird injuries. And don't you remember he had that comeback fight and he was fighting with one arm for most of the time?
Yeah.
So I don't think he's without talent or anything like that, but it's just kind of like on this level, it just seems like he's had his chance to, you know, prove himself, and he kind of, I don't know if it gets any better. I mean, I thought beating Boutte was, like, relatively, you know, easy to predict just because of, you know, Boutte had just been destroyed by Frotch and then went life and death with, Denis Grachev.
Yeah.
And Pascal just being a bigger man, having the same kind of experience against top-level opponents. And all things considered, you know, I thought Pascal was a pretty easy pick.
I've
read people picking Boutte, and I can understand kind of seeing him as being more skilled maybe at his best, but, you know, that Frotch fight was just, it's just so damning to me. I mean, you know, it's not like he went in there and, you know, lost a tight decision or, you know, was outpointed or whatever. I mean, he just got blown, you know, he didn't belong in the same ring with Carl Frotch.
We've discussed in the past how you can't do that kind of, like, linear type of logic in boxing, that just because one guy lost to so-and-so, that means that so-and-so would also beat him. You know, regardless, I think that if you look at what happened to Lucien Boutte against even Grachev, who just semi-recently got absolutely destroyed by Edwin Rodriguez very quickly, too. I think that if you look at what Grachev was able to do against Boutte and then just kind of comparing that to Pascal's performance and just how minimalist Jean Pascal's style seems to be, you know, it's so tough for me to really get behind him in a lot of fights against upper tier light heavyweights when he has a style like that that's so passive some of the time. I just can't pick him. But I wanted to ask you something before I forgot, because I kept hearing in, like, the last week or so, I remember Kevin Ioli had said something about it, and then there were a few other people that had quipped something about Lucien Boutte's team being really unprofessional or doing something really badly during the promotion or something like that, but I never really got any details about that. Did you hear about that?
I think I saw a tweet about it, but I didn't actually read the story.
I still don't know what the hell went on. I mean, I don't know. My guess is that it had something to do with, you know, Boutte probably just being a bit more popular and throwing his weight around, but I literally have no idea. Oh, shit, but there was something else I was going to ask, too, and I think I even wrote it down. And, oh, that's right, the Roy Jones shit. I had to bring that up before.
We can't
let it slide without the Roy Jones shit being brought up. I mean, are the comparisons justified? number one. And number two, why was Roy Jones wearing that condom reservoir tip beanie on his head like Adebisi from Oz? What is he doing? What is he trying to accomplish with this? James, take it away.
Oh, I don't know, but for the first time ever, I thought that the interview with the trainer during the fight was actually pretty worthy. You know,
he just never fails to disappoint.
Well, and then he called him like Mark or Mac or something when he's talking to Max. He was just in the zone. I mean, Roy was just like, yeah, doing the interview and then yelling at Pascal, and it was awesome. Kind of the awkward dynamic created in Pascal's corner with the like main corner man who obviously wanted to be like probably the only guy talking to him, and then Roy coming in after like the second or third round and basically just taking over the in the ring. You know, I mean, the between rounds, like corner talk.
Yeah.
And it was pretty funny, I thought. I mean, I love Roy, and I thought he was, you know, that was just another kind of, I mean, that to me, that was like the most entertaining thing that was going on for the first like 10 rounds.
Roy is a kook, man.
And
he's
like,
Roy.
I just taught him that punch yesterday.
Yeah.
It was kind of like
can a fighter be coming along just a day later, and I just taught him that punch. He doesn't even know what's going on. He just got born, and he's I exaggerated, but yeah, it was pretty funny.
But I did, yeah, I thought that they were going a little overboard with that. You know, like that's a Roy Jones punch, the leaping, you know, right hand. I don't.
Yeah, that every time something like that happens, it just reminds me of Jack Mosley telling Shane Mosley to try the Roy Jones move. Shane going, I tried, I already did. Oh man. Yeah, it overall the event was a little bit disappointing. Well, it's the undercard fight, the co-feature, Mike Perez versus Carlos Takam. I mean, we kind of talked about it a minute ago, but I think there's kind of other stuff that may or may not have been going on in that fight that's worth talking about. I rambled about it for like 15 minutes last week, but well, first of all, I know you don't really score fights like, you know, down on a piece of paper, but who did you get the feeling won that fight, you know, Perez or Takam?
I was thinking that Takam probably deserved it, but, you know, yeah, I wasn't really scoring it closely, and at times I wasn't even watching it closely, to be honest, just because of the way that the whole night played out. I actually, like, I was kind of had a few people over and was kind of trying to like mingle and watch the fights. And I knew I wanted to like, you know, put my main attention on the main event. So I just didn't see the need to like go into the tank for this after the first few rounds. Because
were you couponing with your wife?
Yeah. I mean, there was, she was there. So that played a role in it. But, I think you could probably argue that Perez was maybe a little, you know, I mean, just the first fight coming off of that kind of a tragedy, like what happened with Abdusalamov and being involved in that kind of a fight. I mean, you had to expect it. I mean, I think it's now that we have a few days to kind of think, you know, look at the big picture, it's probably not the worst thing in the world that this is what happened to him, even though it was kind of an upset that Takam was able to get a draw. And I think he probably, in most people's eyes, won the fight. He got the first one out of the way, you know, and we've seen before that a lot of boxers are never the same after something like this, you know, being on the winning side of one of those kind of really tragic fights. Now, Perez, you know, we're probably not talking about real elite world class, you know, is he going to be the heavyweight champion of the world anyway? Probably not. But, you know, things are going to start getting interesting in that kind of the fringe of the heavyweight contenders, with the Klitschkos, you know, on their way out, and Vitaly's gone, and Vladimir probably won't be around too much longer. And these are the kind of fighters that, you know, are going to, whoever's going to come out of these and win these kind of fights. And, you know, it just sucks, I guess, for Perez, because, you know, after something like what happened to him, it wouldn't have been a bad thing for his, you know, next fight to maybe just be something smaller off TV. But I guess in that situation, you got to take it. You know, you got to take the opportunity to be on HBO, and it looks like they want to invest in the heavyweight division. You know, they're continuing to show heavyweight fights that aren't necessarily that significant, but that might. You know, guys like Andy Ruiz, and I know they're going to try to show the Areola Stivern rematch. You know, so I think they're trying to kind of showcase some of the up and coming heavyweights, and you know, who might end up, you know, fighting for the championship one day. But and you know, my overall take on what happened here was I think that Perez was a little bit, you know, apprehensive and maybe, you know, mentally wasn't the same 100% focused, you know, aggressive kind of killer that he was in his last fight. And I think that Takam, you know, did really well for himself to hang in there and fight on even terms and kind of, you know, use the style to end up, you know, really fighting a good fight. And the last few rounds were actually pretty good and pretty entertaining. And so, I didn't have a horrible complaint with the draw because I think it's probably a good thing that they rematch each other. You know, whereas if Takam had gotten the win, it would have been, you know, really devastating for Perez because maybe he wouldn't, you know, maybe Takam doesn't give him a rematch and then Takam just tries to ride that momentum and become the guy. You know, now they actually are going to have to settle it and we'll get to see, you know, was this a product of Perez kind of, you know, being in his first fight since what happened and dealing with that, or can we really say definitively that Takam, you know, was the superior fighter? Or is the superior fighter? I think a rematch would be great to kind of reveal that.
You know, I agree that I thought that Carlos Takam probably deserved to take the decision. It was a bit of a contrast to the Mike Perez that we saw against Magomed Abdusalamov in that he started a lot quicker against Abdusalamov. I don't know if that he felt Abdusalamov was posing a threat, because, I mean, Magomed was fighting back himself, so it wasn't like he was, you know, one-sided, but, it did seem to be somewhat psychological, because he just didn't seem to be as aggressive. He didn't really seem to be pushing the issue quite as much, even though he was landing a really nice, heavy jab, which I love, but, yeah, last handful of rounds, he was kind of getting dinged around a little bit. And I think that from this point forward, this is really going to be the answer to whether or not he'll be, quote-unquote, the same, or at the very least be able to proceed forth as if, you know, he's moving on with his career. This draw is one thing. You know, this is something he can bounce back from, kind of move forward from if he's serious about, you know, continuing on. But if he's going to be a kind of sedate type of fighter, or if he's going to be basically fighting how he fought in the last half of the fight, he's pretty much just going to be a run-of-the-mill heavyweight. I mean, that's essentially what they are. I mean, I rewatched the fight just because it happened to be on, and, you know, I wanted to piss my wife off. What do you want, you know?
Yeah.
So I put it on, and I'm sitting there watching it, and, you know, I was listening to the commentary because I guess I just wasn't really paying close attention the first time. And someone I wanted to say had said something about, you know, how many punches they were throwing, or like they're being really active. And I'm sitting there watching it, and it was like, I think the seventh round, and they had combined to throw something like 600 punches or, you know, something like that. And I'm kind of adding it up in my head and doing the math, and I'm thinking, you know, over the years, Ike Baibucci versus David Tua is a fight that, for whatever reason, you know, a lot of people have kind of poo-pooed it over the years, and at the time it was fun, but point is, they threw a shit ton of punches, and I was just kind of thinking about it. I'm like, damn, you know, heavyweights today just don't fucking throw punches for shit. And, you know, the fact that this kind of somewhat high output for heavyweights is like, this is a blistering affair, you know. It's so weird to me that these guys can get away with doing so little sometimes, especially in comparison to, you know, sorry to do it, but how fighters used to fight or used to be. But, you know, with Mike Perez going forward, I kind of would like to see a rematch just because Carlos Takam, he put it together a little bit better than I thought he would in those first few rounds. I think that it's possible that that could be another co-feature type of bout. I wouldn't want to see that in the main event, though.
Right. I mean, I don't think that's a main event. I mean, I think that's like a main event on Friday Night Fights, and hopefully, you know, it's the rematch. I'm for the rematch. I don't necessarily want it to be on an HBO show, just because, you know, this whole event, I just thought, and I'm not trying to be, you know, so negative about everything, but also have a, you know, I don't know if I told you how I quit smoking after, you know, a great 10-year run about 4 months ago, but I just finally quit the Nicorette like 4 days ago. So that probably additionally contributed to my my edginess and tension when I was watching this, and I'm just like, what the fuck is going on here?
You did not have the fucking patience for that shit.
Well, I got to be honest. I mean, I just kind of going, you know, now that I've had some time to reflect on it, I mean, sure, yeah, there's a place for fights like this, and I like the heavyweight division. You know, I just like seeing big guys fight. I think there's a lot of awesome stuff that happens there. We've talked many times before, though, about how just skill-wise and athletically, it's just not the same caliber of athletes and technicians at heavyweight that there are in the lower weight classes. But, you know, part of what was going through my head on Saturday night when I was making that call after the first couple rounds, like, yeah, I'm going to just pop out and come back and watch the main event. Although, like I said, I did later. I watched it on DVR and fast-forwarded, and I watched the last few rounds of the heavyweight fight. But I was kind of thinking, like, I don't really care about watching two shitty heavyweights who are never going to really amount to anything. And, I mean, that's kind of what this was, you know? I mean, neither of these guys are going to be the heavyweight champion of the world. And if they are, that's a really sad testament to where, you know, what's become of the heavyweight division.
Well, you know, Sam Girasi, who writes for Boxing Insider, had tweeted a minute or two ago that it could also have been the punishment that Mike Perez incurred at the hands of Abdu Salamov in that fight, which I think they had also mentioned on the broadcast, but I didn't even think to mention. So that's a pretty decent point.
He did.
Himself,
he did take a lot of punches.
He took some punches.
Yeah, I know. It was a nasty, brutal fight.
So, you know.
And then it just sucks it's horrible what happened. And obviously that type of thing, you know, it's constantly there in the background. It's like, well, we don't really like to talk about it, you know, what could possibly happen when, you know, anytime two guys engage in prize fighting. But for a guy like Perez to have gone through it, and that it seems like that was so recent too, you know. I mean, what are we talking about, like 3 months ago?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
So the fact that his effort did seem a little bit, you know, and he also took the worst end of the pretty bad headbutt in like the third round.
Yeah, that cut was kind of nasty.
But it's going to be hard to see Perez and not, you know, link him with that tragedy. I mean, that's probably always going to be a major part of, you know, his legacy as a fighter. And it's going to be tough for him to, you know, rebound. But those guys are the, you know, I don't know, you know, what do we want to see? Like Andy Ruiz Jr. fight against those guys, you know, that type of opponent? I mean, the heavyweight division is brutal in some part because every good prospect, they basically, like, keep them away from each other. So you're not going to see, you know, Deontay Wilder fight Ryan Jennings or Deontay Wilder or Tyson Fury, even though, I mean, eventually maybe we will, but...
Well, I think that it's due to the potential money that the heavyweights can bring. I mean, I think that it's just in the last maybe 10 to 12 years, there haven't really been any huge money-making heavyweights aside from the Klitschkos, and I don't really know that they make all that much here in the United States. It's mostly German money and the money they make from selling out arenas over there, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that the potential money in having a good heavyweight or a heavyweight champion to market is enough that, you know, it's worth keeping them undefeated and stuff like that, especially because this coming weekend, like a guy like David Price, he's coming back this weekend after two straight stoppage losses. So, and that's needless to say, really damaging to a heavyweight's career these days.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't even know what it would take to really breathe a breath of fresh air into the heavyweight division anymore. And, you know, I hope a guy like Mike Perez can move forward because he seems to be kind of taking a somewhat philosophical approach to what happened against Magomed Abdusalamov. I mean, he didn't really have a ton to say about it, not that I'd really expect him to. But, you know, he could have certainly acted a lot douchier about it than he did. So in any event, I hope he does well moving forward. I'm just not really sure, and I hope that he's able to show more than he showed against Takam, or especially in a rematch if they make that, but I'd watch it.
Yeah, and I really look forward to not watching the rest of his career on Friday Night Fights. But,
exactly.
You know, no, and seriously, like, because, I mean, dude, I used to be the biggest, like, HBO, just out of pure boyhood with, like, you know, Lampley, Merchant. I mean, just gobble up whatever they put down our throats. I mean, I'm you know, I'm all about the HBO boxing brand.
Pause.
You know, pretty much infallible in my eyes. But, you know, now I'm just, the more you look at it, and it's like, there are enough compelling fights and fighters, and if you could put, you know, a little bit of pressure on, like, the one promoter that you're working with, you know, top, mostly top rank, who, where else are they going to go with their fight? So they have to do kind of whatever HBO says. I mean, and this wasn't a top rank show, so it wasn't the problem here, but, like, you know, just to be a little more selective in kind of the fights you're choosing to buy on your air, and maybe putting pressure on some of the promoters to put really interesting things. Because when I'm watching this, I mean, I like to see either, like, real, legitimate, like, you know, championship-level fights. I mean, it is called HBO Championship Boxing, right? Or, you know, watch some kind of a young fighter who really has, like, a you know, a bright future, really could become, you know, in, like, a tough crossroads kind of a test. Like, that's fine for an opening fight. But that's – I just don't see, you know, Mike Perez and Carlos Takam. I mean, I find Perez like an interesting character, and same with Takam. I mean, cool backstory, but either of these guys, I mean, you're not really believing that they're, you know, I mean, these guys are like a level below Deontay Wilder in terms of like what their potential upside could be, you know. And Wilder's best case is probably maybe that he could last to like the seventh round before getting knocked out by Klitschko,
or sprayed by a fire extinguisher.
Right. Or, yeah, or injured before the fight. But,
yeah. Or, yeah,
no, I mean, like, you know. No, I mean, I'm down for stuff, but it's just, like, these kind of opening fights, and then the card this weekend, too, I can't say I'm, you know, Spilka and Jennings. I mean, yeah, I'm kind of down because I like Spilka because he's crazy, you know, and he fought in Chicago a couple times, but if I was just an average fan, I can't say I'd be, like, too hyped up to watch Spilka and Jennings either. I mean, it really is like a boxing insider, you know, like, you'd be down with it, but the average common fan, I mean, I don't know. I feel like HBO is not off to a strong start with these first two cards. And to me, Mikey Garcia is basically in like another showcase fight against the exact same level of opponent that he just knocked out in fifth round or whatever.
Well, I've heard a couple people. Well, let me ask you real quick first, just to get it out of the way, because I don't know if you watched it. Did you watch Showbox?
I'm trying to remember who was on. Oh, the Ivan Redcock?
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Redcock?
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't know if I watched it or not. I definitely had it on, but I'm like... Yeah, I did see some... There was some awesome knockout, right?
Yes, there was. Okay, all right. Well,
not
least,
in that
at least
fight,
you watched
but
a little bit of it.
One of the undercards.
Yeah. Well, I can even... I'll do a quick recapping of it.
I did
so
watch. Yeah,
preview.
I did see some of it, man.
Well, we'll do a quick recapping of it so we can get to all the shit that's happening this weekend, because there's actually a lot. But
there's some stuff. I mean, how good it is debatable, but...
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there is a lot. I don't know that any of it
I'm
is
I'm just
top
kidding, dude.
Quality,
dude,
but...
I'm just being a total dickhead, like... hating everything.
No,
you know.
It is true though.
I mean, I've got the last of the nicotine is just oozing out of my pores here. I'm dying a little bit, but
dude, I had an electronic cigarette
life.
For like 4 months, and then
are you completely quit or did you go back?
Yeah, no, I had an electronic cigarette for like 4 months or something like that, and then I that shit broke on me, and it had already broken before, so I just stopped using it, and I've been not on it for like 2 months. So,
and you're not,
yeah.
And you're not smoking at all?
It's, no. And it's still
oh,
kind
awesome.
Of edgy, but it's tough, man. It's really
good
fucking
for you,
tough.
Man.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that you'd quit.
I wish I had never picked one up in the first place. Now I can't even stand like when somebody's, if somebody's smoking like around me or something like that and we're outside or something, that's fine. But if we're inside, I'll fucking want to rampage. I hate it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Anyway.
Disgusting habit.
As far,
loathsome creatures.
Yeah.
Classless.
Fucking smokers, man.
Yeah, I think it should be banned in all public places and private places.
Yeah, I think it should just be, dude, they should just fucking execute everybody who smokes. All right, let's move on.
Yeah.
Jesus. Showbox.
But that's awesome, man, because I remember us having sharing a cigarette in Las Vegas a couple years ago.
Yeah, in the hotel room. We shared a cigarette. And, it was magical.
I don't remember it being in the hotel room, but.
Oh, it might have been somebody.
That was in Steve Kim's room, right?
Yes, that's exactly right. That's Name exactly
Robert.
Right. Yep. Fuck. Fucking showbox. All right.
So I'm glad
showbox.
We're both off. We're both off those nasty.
You're a son of a bitch.
All right. Anyway, Ivan Redcock.
Yep. Yeah, speaking of Vegas. So, Ivan Redcatch, I think that's how they were pronouncing it on the broadcast. Well, first of all, I just wanted to say that thank you, Showbox, for delivering an actual Showbox-like card, because that's pretty much exactly what Showbox should be, what happened on Friday. A bunch of either unbeaten or, you know, once or twice beaten type of fighters who are inexperienced and fighting each other. That's what the show's for, and that's not what they had been using it for like the last year overall. And on top of that, they showed four fights, which I don't think they've ever done before, at least not that I know of. So that was kind of nice. Ivan Redcatch, there was a little bit of controversy in the main event because
Controversy. There was a little controversy over how his name was pronounced too, because I heard Redcock. I wasn't like just saying it.
I didn't even hear that.
A solid source on Twitter.
I'm down for it.
Doug Fisher actually said that it's pronounced Redcock, but they were calling him Koch on the show.
Yeah, well, see, now I just...
I don't know.
That's unfortunate, because I wish I would just been hearing Redcock all night. But he came
in as,
like... Yeah,
I was looking
forward
to that, too. I think Espinoza had to change the pronunciation the last minute.
Yeah. Well, they need to,
Make
posters... When they make posters, you know, for his fights in the future, they need to, like, you know, underneath his name, put in parentheses like Red-Cock to make sure everybody understands that's how it's pronounced. That's probably his best marketing tool. And he didn't even do anything. Yeah, he came in. He's, you know, he was supposed to have been a huge puncher and really a sought after prospect or whatever. And this guy Tony Lewis, who is for the most part unknown, or at least I'd never seen him or heard of him, came in and upset the apple cart a little bit, and I thought probably deserved to take a close decision.
I saw the whole thing then.
Yeah,
Lewis was like a Canadian dude, right?
I think he. I want to say he was.
I mean, he's
New
like
York,
a white guy.
He's from Canada.
A white Canadian guy.
Yeah. With a beard, I might add. But he held his own, and I thought that he did very well. They blew a knockdown call in the first round. They both knocked each other down, and the only one they called was Redcox. And it didn't even wind up deciding the fight, really. But I thought that Lewis did well enough that he could have been, he could have taken the decision, although there were a number of rounds that were tough to score, blah, blah, blah. It was actually a pretty entertaining main event, though. I wrote it all down, but now I have to go back to it.
Well,
okay, Frank Galarza was the guy
better...
who scored the knockout.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
That's right. Well, no, I was going to say, you're right. I mean, I think it's a much better showbox card than some of the stuff you sometimes get where it's really just showcases. There's like a clear A-side and B, like that money team, the TMT showbox last year.
Yeah. Well, I think that where it really struck me as sucking was, and I've brought it up before, but they had Jermaine Taylor on it, and then on the exact same
Jermaine
show.
Jermaine Taylor showbox.
It was like they had Jeff Lacy and Jermaine Taylor, or they had Jermaine Taylor and somebody else that was like really should have retired, and they were both on it, and I was just, it was Andre Durrell. It was Andre Durrell,
that's right.
his comeback fight after getting decapitated against Arthur Abraham and then going into a seizure and then a 10-year coma and then having to see a psychiatrist. And yeah, so it was this fucking comeback fight. And I remember thinking, this is going to be a show box. It was pretty horrific, needless to say.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird, maybe they could have labeled it differently.
Yeah,
but it was
more
a
like
special
show you these stuff. Motherfuckers you don't want to see box.
Yeah, I don't. But that might have been the night of the Jermaine Taylor Caleb Truax, post fight interview. I can't complain because that got filled up the entertainment quotient for that show.
Yeah, it was in the ring it was bad for the most part.
Yeah.
But
you're right, man. It is great to see when you know that it's like legitimate, like 50-50 prospects, for the most part in these kind of fights, because there obviously are so many across the country. You can find those kind of fights that can really advance fighters' careers. And, so many guys who are like world class now started off on Showbox. So it's a great series. And, I didn't mean to shit on the fight like Takam and Perez has no place. I mean, it has place. I'm just saying that, to me, the HBO, championship shows.
No, exactly.
Even
though.
Boxing
it
at
has
dark,
a place.
They should just
it
have
has a
higher.
Place, but that place might not be on HBO.
That's what I'm thinking. That's
no, for sure.
My main complaint.
I
just
wonder
that whole process works, how aggressive that those guys are, because you got to give credit. I mean, Espinoza at Showtime, Golden Boy's giving him great cards from top to bottom, they're giving them quality shows. Like last year, they really did. There was some shit in there, and they also got lucky in that some of the matchups that didn't look so good on paper actually turned out to be really fun and competitive.
That's true,
so things worked out. They caught a couple breaks, but they also just gave, because their stable's so deep, they gave them these 3-4 fight cards, and that's, and I don't know if it was like Golden Boy just volunteering it, like, here, this is what we're going to do, or if Showtime and Espinoza, asked for a higher standard and more fights or whatever. But I mean, you look at the HBO thing, and it's kind of like they're pretty much, it looks like they're just kind of taking whatever's being given to them. And there's no one there really, aggressively trying to say, I want this fight to happen. I want that fight. I mean, should their goals be for this year, Like Stevenson, Kovalev, that's got to be top of the list. Golovkin, giving him a big fight, even if it means you got to do Golovkin and Andre Ward. They're going to have to do something to get some of the attention, some of the, luster back, because they're really getting their ass kicked right now. And all they've got they're going to have now is the Pacquiao pay-per-views.
Let me ask you a question about Steven Espinoza. Do you think that he trolls Oscar De La Hoya in their meetings like he does on Twitter?
I don't know, but I like the fact
because
that
he's pretty
damn good
at that on Twitter.
Well, I think he's entertaining to follow on Twitter, and I think it's cool that he's actually interacting with fans, and he seems like he has a good sense of humor. And obviously, they're going to take a lot of criticism because boxing fans are kind of a wacky bunch. But I think he handles himself really well, and most important thing is the product that he's put on for the most part has been really good.
Yeah.
The innovations of just adding two extra fights, adding the Showtime Extreme, showing the undercard. Really meeting boxing fans' demand, and that's not even thinking about, the Showbox series doesn't even have that much to do with it. That's really just the Showtime, the flagship with all the Golden Boy shows. But on top of that, what they do with Showbox, HBO doesn't even have anything like that. So it's definitely taken over, I think, as the premier boxing network. I hate to say it. I still would, prefer the talent at HBO, and there's 99% of that is just pure, Lampley. But behind that, that Showtime team is getting better. Malignaggi's been great. Brian Kenny anchoring things, and Bernstein, Farhood, obviously, solid, been around forever. So it's like they're just – Showtime's number one right now. Hate to say it.
Yeah.
So I guess Espinoza, he can troll whoever he wants. I'd like to see Ken Hirschman get on Twitter and have Espinoza troll him.
Golden Boy, give us a job. We want a job. Yeah, they've been doing well.
Yeah. We would like to be De La Hoya and Schaefer's personal assistants.
Yep. I'll take De La Hoya.
It probably would be more fun. Although a lot of that would be standing outside of, like, locked hotel rooms, not sure whether he's, like, you know, sleeping or overdosed on drugs or there's a dead hooker.
Yeah,
a lot
it'll,
of that would
be
standing
like,
outside of doors trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And
it'll be
you
like,
it
you
in.
Know, it'll be like a movie from, like, the 50s. Like, you know, you're walking into your apartment building in New York and you, like, trip over a guy and you're like, who the fuck is this bum? And then, like, he rolls over and you're like, it's Oscar De La Hoya. Yeah, I could see that happening. Okay, I don't think we're getting jobs at Golden Boy anymore. That's
well,
right.
If you find the secret golden Easter egg that Oscar hid somewhere in the country, then I think he gives you get a lifetime job at Golden Boy with $1 million a year salary.
Yeah, there's a possibility.
Pretty sure he's I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah, there is a possibility. Just don't let old Slugworth.
If you find his secret egg. Yeah, he does have a little whiz, like Willy Wonka meets, you know.
Yeah. Oh, we're stupid.
No, I like I love Oscar.
Oscar's pretty funny. I think Oscar's probably a good dude at heart, but just get that guy off of social media, like ASAP, for his own sake.
Really?
Yeah.
I
for
want more Oscars
sake,
and more Broners and more Victor Ortiz's, you know?
I'm just saying,
like,
hey,
when you were joking
sake,
around
for
about
my sake, keep them on.
Yeah, well, exactly. So, you know, when you were saying about how, there's like all this boxing on this weekend and Foley won't watch any of it, taking that jab, I was thinking about like being like, to be honest with you, man, my number one fight this month, if I could only watch one, is probably Ortiz Colasso.
I don't even, man.
I mean, if I had a gun
Victor
to my
Ortiz
head
fights.
And I could only watch one fight for the rest of the month, hopefully it is this month because it might be on like February 1st or something. But for the next couple
I think
weeks,
it's next week.
Yeah, it's next week.
Yeah, so it'd be like February or the 1st or 2nd or something. I don't know. I don't know.
Well,
I'd have
for the
to
next
look
two
again.
Weekends,
I don't even know
that's probably my number one fight if I had to watch one. Could only watch one fight. I think I'd go with the Ortiz fight.
Anytime that dude steps
into
a ring. Oh,
I kind of like that. I like that Charlo Rosado too, but I.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. Face Lube's just must see TV.
Twin Charlo, dude. We're gonna talk about Twin Charlo in a couple minutes. Well, here, let me finish up with the Showbox bullshit real quick, because there's a hilarious sideways mohawk joke in there somewhere, because oh man, I just had his name in front of me and now I don't even have it anymore. What was it? Blah, blah, blah. Frank Galarza. He was the one who scored the knockout, and the guy with the crazy mohawk was John Thompson. That was the dude who went face first. You know, he got hit with a hook and then – or I think it was a right hand and then a hook, and he just basically went to sleep face first.
Yeah.
And at first his mohawk was kind of like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and then the hook just straightened it right out, dude. It was just too bad he went face first and ruined it because it was perfect there for like a split second as he was falling, and then – not anymore. And then another dude who fought was Maurice Hooker. That was the guy who was huge and gangly, and he drew with Abel Ramos. And then, of course, Antoine Douglas, who decisioned Marcus Davis. And Marcus Davis was the dude who had his tooth knocked out of his mouth, and he was tripping about whether or not he was going to get his tooth back mid-fight. So there was some decent entertainment during the Showbox start.
I think I missed that one.
Yeah,
the first one I saw was the Hooker fight.
Yeah, that was the opening fight, and then I can't remember the order in between.
Oh, okay.
But it was
then
either
maybe
the second or third
fight.
I
missed the one with the tooth.
Yeah, he got, sorry, Mr. Marcus Davis, but he went into the fight with a busted grill in the first place. I mean, like, the dude was not opening his mouth, and I was just like, oh, okay, he's a, you know, good-looking young prospect, and he's going into this fight looking real well. And then, like, during the pre-fight interview, he smiled, and I was like, fuck that shit, sorry. And he got his tooth seriously just, like, blasted out of his mouth. It was pretty bad. So somebody picked up the tooth and, like, gave it to his manager mid-fight.
That's
and he
good.
Was tripping out in the corner about his tooth, like, whether or not he was going to get his tooth back. It's good shit. So, yeah, that was Showbox. Anyway, point was that it was nice to see something entertaining on that in that format again. Oh, buddy.
Well, hopefully, I hear you. And hopefully, I'm looking forward to Taylor Truax 2 on Showbox this summer.
Well, shit, after Caleb Truax basically crapped the bed.
Yeah,
week,
I mean, now it's...
he might be going back to right back to Showbox.
Yeah, he might be off Showbox, actually.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, well, whatever. I never really got it with that dude anyway, but good luck to him.
Well, he was in the Minnesota draw, so I was kind of down with him for, you know, our boy Sled Skills, you know, getting a couple fights in Sled Skills'
really
hometown.
They don't really have a whole lot to hang their hat on in Minnesota as far as boxing, unfortunately.
Well, that's true. I think their WNBA team's really good, though.
Oh, well,
so,
shit.
Got that.
Had I known that, I would have moved there sooner. All right, well, then let's talk about this mismatch on this Mikey Mark Garcia mismatch on HBO. Do you really think it's going to be a mismatch, though? Because the reason,
well,
what I was going to say earlier was that, like, for example, I was hanging out with Adam Abramowitz from Saturday Night Boxing the other day. He happened to be in San Diego for his job, and we caught lunch. And he seemed to think that the fight might be close. And then I've seen a number of other people talking about it, saying that they also thought that Burgos had a really good chance. So,
yeah, but, dude,
really
every single fight we've ever previewed, you could have said, like, I was talking to a couple people, and they think that this guy's got a chance. I mean,
of course.
That's, like, you know, standard. I mean, yeah, he's got a chance.
Well, yeah.
I mean, fucking, you know, Rocky Martinez knocked him down in his last fight, right? But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. You just – well, go ahead. Where do you stand on this? You're saying that Burgos is going to knock out Mikey Garcia. That's what you just said, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much my call. No, I mean, I don't really have a whole ton of confidence in Juan Carlos Burgos or anything like that. And I think that Mikey Garcia he's a favorite, and he should be. Yeah, and Burgos probably isn't really being brought in to, like, take out Mikey Garcia or anything like that. And on top of that, I think that Burgos is, I don't know, he seems a little bit overhyped to me as far as what he can do. He's not a bad fighter, but I just see Mikey Garcia, you know, right around 130 pounds. I don't really know that there's anybody right off the top of my head that I'd pick over Mikey Garcia. And going into the fight, you know, before I had talked to anybody, my initial thought was, yeah, it was pretty much going to be a mismatch. Not necessarily that it was a showcase, because Burgos' style, I guess, could do something. But anyway, after talking to a few people, it just kind of, I don't know, perked my ear up, I guess, because that's what I had thought, same as you. But then hearing a couple people think that maybe he would get tested, I don't know, made me want to look into it a little bit more.
You know, he might. I mean, like, you know, you could say Martinez tested him a little bit because he knocked him down. You know, he kind of wobbled him in the first round, and Garcia had to get his stuff back together before he, you know, really boxed and then TKO'd Rocky Martinez. You know, so could Burgos do something similar to that? Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, to me, that's the best-case scenario for Burgos, and I do rule out him winning. You know, I just think Garcia is one of those rare guys. I mean, I really think he has the goods. You know, he is an elite fighter in his division. He's by far the best fighter there, and he just, you know, beat a guy who I think is probably just even slightly better than Burgos, but basically an equal to Burgos in Rocky Martinez. I mean, then they fought, and it was a draw, which I think Martinez could have won, but... you know, I just think that we just saw Garcia in against the exact same level of opponent as Burgos. And, you know, once he got out of that kind of, you know, initial rough patch in the first, which, you know, can happen sometimes, I guess, he pretty much dominated him and stopped him. So I don't see Burgos having really any different. I mean, I think he's kind of similar fighter to Martinez, too. Maybe has a little bit more, like, power, but... I don't know. I just don't see Mikey having a tough time with him. You know, Garcia is one of those guys, like, kind of like, you know, an Andre Ward or, Maybe you could start putting Golovkin in that category, but you have to strongly favor them against anybody who's not an elite fighter, you know? Anybody who's not, you know, world class. I mean, there might be some really good fighters who can lose to, you know, good fighters, like we saw, Abner Meres get knocked out by Johnny Gonzalez, and that was kind of a shock too. But I don't think Meres had ever been as dominant. Meres was really good, and he was on an incredible run, and I think he could still be, you know, become a really good, if not great, fighter. But he was never really as dominant as Garcia at his weight class. You know, I just think Garcia is special at 126, 130, and I don't think that Burgos, I think Burgos, comparatively, is ordinary. And I think you can almost bank on a very similar result to what happened with Rocky Martinez. And best case, maybe Burgos can test him a little bit early, but I think more likely is this time it's just like Rocky Martinez, only without the first round.
Yeah, I think that Burgos is probably a little bit more straight up than Rocky Martinez was. Rocky Martinez just has a really weird style, weird kind of timing, and he throws shots from. He kind of like throws those types of shots that if you just look at the way he's punching, it doesn't look like the punches would ever land, but they do, probably out of surprise, but. But, yeah, I would say as far as the skill level or as far as the class, they're probably on a pretty similar class. So, yeah, I don't expect Burgos to win, but I'm wondering if he might be able to do anything early. And I'm also wondering about I know that Mikey Garcia had been struggling to make featherweight, and he doesn't really seem to be struggling or anything like that to make 130. But it seems as though even after having already moved up, it already seems as though there's still kind of concerns about him moving up in weight. And, you know, when is he going to move up in weight again? And he just got there. He, you know, it's not like he's been fighting at 130 for a while yet. He literally just got there. But there's still this constant talk about his weight. When is he going to move up and stuff like that? So it makes me kind of wonder if he's still struggling to take off weight despite looking as though he's making it just fine. So, yeah, early on, I guess, there's kind of an open window for Burgos to do something. Will he? Probably not.
I don't know. I don't think he will, but I'm just looking at what some of these guys, like our boys Starks and Joel Stern on Twitter, chiming in here with some commentary. Nah, fuck those guys. No, but Starks...
They probably fucking blog, man.
...was saying that Burgos is basically one of the top contenders at 130 outside of Uchiyama. And, yeah, that's true. So, okay, valid point. I guess Garcia beating... I mean, it's kind of like this is the first example, the classic, you know, when Roy Jones had his run at light heavyweight and basically, I mean, he did beat every, you know, aside from Mikhalchevsky, basically beat every single contender in the division, you know, and there's, you know, I guess you can't really ask for more than that. And I get with Mikey here, yeah, all things considered, I guess it's an okay fight, but I'm just looking forward to, you know, the real mega fight this year when Yuriorkis Gamboa knocks Mikey out in about 4 months.
Boom!
You know,
Damn.
So he finally steps up against an equal. But no, I think the problem with Mikey is, you know, like Tim is right. I mean, there's not much there, and you've got, I guess, some really good fighters at like 122, and Nonito getting up to 126, although they have the same trainer, and Nonito's got his own unfinished business. But yeah, for Mikey, things probably don't really get interesting until he starts getting up to 35 and maybe even 40. Because it sounds like right now, you know, he's going for the cash cow. He wants to have, you know, somehow make a fight with Pacquiao happen down the road. So we'll see. You know, I guess Burgos, as far as a defense at 130, it's not a bad fight. It's just not going to be competitive. And then, like, you know, Joel Stern was saying how, you know, I have irrational expectations that I want to see competitive fights. He's right. That's not really what boxing is.
Such an asshole. Yeah, he's such an asshole, dude. We shouldn't be expecting that type of shit.
Block that guy right now. Tired of his shit.
Fucking guys. Well, what do you, since you you saw Arthur Spielka, who's fighting, of course, Brian Jennings in the co-main
yeah,
event or whatever, you saw him, right? Like, weren't you at the Mallo fight, the last Mallo fight?
Yeah, dude. I mean, I basically Thomas Hauser'd his locker room. You know, I was there backstage, you know, getting ready, saw the aftermath. Yeah, I mean, I did see him fight live. It was one of the great honors of my life.
Wasn't he the second on your list for letting bang your wife on our year end awards?
No, he was not on my list.
Oh,
especially not. I don't know if you remember those like tuxedo style like briefs that boxer briefs that he was wearing at the weigh in.
Oh, I remember.
After that, I bumped him pretty far down that list. I don't want anyone near my wife.
Fair enough.
No, Spielka. Yeah, he's kind of a fun fighter, you know, maybe pretty limited, I would say, but I think this is an interesting, potentially interesting fight, because, like, we don't, you know, from the looks of it, it looks like, if anything, Spielka can punch, and, you know, he is a southpaw, I think, and if he can land that big left hand, he can do some damage. And, you know, Jennings hasn't really, I haven't seen Jennings in a while. I think he was kind of off the grid because of some promotional stuff. But Jennings is kind of like, you know, a straightforward boxer puncher, really athletic and quick for a heavyweight, kind of on the small side. Hasn't fought really, you know, great competition yet. And, you know, his best names were past their primes. So this could be, you know, turn out to be pretty exciting and pretty fun. I mean, I don't have, you know, very, I mean, I think Spielka, you know, he's never going to be a great fighter. You know, Spielka is not going to become a great heavyweight champion or, you know, go down in history with Ali and Tyson and Joe Lewis. I'm almost positive that I can guarantee that. Jennings, you know, maybe there's like a 99.9 repeated percent chance that he won't either. But I think of the two, he has that, you know, a little bit more glimmer of an upside because, you know, he hasn't lost yet, which there's always some intrigue in that. He has, and he's looked good in the fights that he's had, and he was actually, like, you know, pretty even money or an underdog in some of his first couple fights, like, you know, getting on TV. He wasn't, like, the groomed prospect like Deontay Wilder, just set up for mismatches. I mean, Jennings kind of earned his position by winning those fights, beating another prospect, beating a couple of gatekeeper, you know, older guys, and, you know, getting that those spots on NBC Sports to become, like, you know, considered a legitimate, like, heavyweight prospect. And so this to me looks like it's probably going to be Jennings' toughest test, just because he's in there with a guy who's, you know, young and undefeated and can punch. But all that said, I mean, you look at what Mike Mallo was able to do with Spielka, and you'd think that Jennings, just being more sophisticated and athletic and, you know, having the stamina to go rounds, that he should be able to, you know, evade Spielka's kind of, you know, predictable one-dimensional type of attack, which, in all fairness, it is pretty standard, you know. Spielka's not really showing a lot of
wrinkles. Well, Mike Mallo almost took him out twice.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. I mean, and Mallo was able to do. So, I mean, I think that Jennings should be able to win this fight and outbox him pretty easily and use his kind of his, you know, movement and hand speed to either outpoint him or hurt him, because Spielka has looked vulnerable. Although, you know, Mallo was hitting him with those, like, huge winging shots that are just basically, like, you know. Jennings maybe probably won't attack him like that, but who knows. But I think it's Jennings' fight to lose. But I guess it is somewhat intriguing, just because, I mean, for me, you know, having watched Jennings kind of develop as a prospect on TV and then seeing Spielka a couple times in person, and, you know, he was in the two great fights with Mallo, it'll be cool to see how it actually plays out. And, you know, I think if Jennings can land a big punch and hurt, I mean, if Spielka can land a big punch and, like, hurt Jennings, that would kind of, you know, potentially turn the fight into something more special, where you get to really see what Jennings is made of, and, you know, that could be great. So it's a good, you know, it's decent. It's not a great HBO undercard either, but it's, you know, it's okay.
I think it's all right. I mean, don't get me wrong. Neither of these guys are, you know, top anything talent right this second at heavyweight. I mean, nobody really knows. And it is kind of more of a, well, we were talking about showbox earlier, and it is kind of, I think, more of a showbox type of matchup. However, I think it does have potential to be interesting. I want to say it was either NBC Sports or I don't know, it couldn't have been Fox Sports, I don't think, but I think it was on the NBC Sports channel on one of their like main event shows or something like that, or main events shows, that Brian Jennings took on Sergey Fedosov.
Yeah,
I think, or something like that. Well, no, he
Who?
Did take on him a couple of years ago. It was his last fight. It was last
year.
Oh,
yeah.
And I mean, he wound up, he basically wound up going to war with him. And, well, in spots anyway, not the entire fight. But I thought that he showed he had a damn hard head, and he seemed to have a pretty good chin. So I'm not entirely sure I'd put a whole lot of stock into Spielka being able to knock him out. But, that said, you know, even with Fur Jennings, you know, Spielka just kind of pegs the, he seems like a really wily guy. He seems like he's probably going to take some chances in there. And I have a feeling he'll probably, you know, go a little buck wild a couple times. So that could make it kind of interesting and fun as far as heavyweight fights go, I guess. So I'm pretty interested in it. And also, Artur Spielka, he just recently, like a couple days ago, got like visa issues fixed. Like he was being prevented from, you know, or he had to take two flights
to the U.S.
to Poland or some shit.
Yeah, he had to come fly here and then come back and then fly back.
And I mean, that's no joke.
Not good.
So,
yeah,
I'd have to say that kind of stacks the deck against him additionally.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. It's I'm not sure, you know, for Jennings, I mean, this is a huge opportunity, very high stakes here, I would think. I mean, I think if you lose to Spielka, your first HBO spot, you're just taking a major step backward. Spielka probably has less to gain and lose in that sense, you know. He will be an underdog here, and it's also, like, you know, he's got the built-in excuses. Well, hey, they denied my visa. I had to fly back and forth from Europe to the U.S., you know, twice, like 5 days before the fight. He's also just not considered, you know, he's also... Because of the way his fights with Malo, he doesn't have to be, like, a great heavyweight prospect. He can just be a fun, exciting heavyweight who makes action fights. And so that first loss isn't going to necessarily kill him as much, especially if it's, you know, to somebody like Jennings who just outboxes him and he doesn't get, like, humiliated, you know, or you know, brutally knocked out.
And also especially if that last fight with Mike Malo is any indication, it seems, well, we already know that Polish fans are going to come out in droves if they like the dude. I mean, there's no question. We've seen it with a number of different guys. We saw it with Andrew Galata. Yep. You know, well, I mean, the list pretty much goes on. But in any event, we've already seen that. I think that he seems to have at least a decent following and a decent chunk of fans that are going to be supporting him, whether he wins or loses. So you have a pretty good point there. But as far as Brian Jennings and what he would need to do to get his career going in 2014, starting with this fight, because, I mean, it basically got derailed. He only fought once last year, and it was that one fight against Fedosov, which was, you know, it was a solid fight and everything, but it didn't really do anything for Brian Jennings' career. So what would he need to do against Spielka, in your estimation, to really launch himself here?
Well, I think if he just, you know, as long as he gets a W and it's not, you know, like horrible fight, you know, I think he'll get another chance on HBO. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if they're making these fights between, you know, heavyweights of this caliber, I mean, not even like real top 10 contenders, then why wouldn't Jennings, you know, move on and fight, you know, if they do a Takam Perez rematch, fight the winner of that, or fight, you know, try to position himself to maybe fight against Areola or Stavern, whoever wins that fight, you know, rematch. He should, you know, HBO's putting him on. I mean, usually they're doing it for a reason. You know, it's not – and. If the guy wins and, you know, looks good doing it. So I don't think he needs to, you know, knock Spielka out or anything like that. I think he succeeds if he either, you know, beats him handily on points, knocks him out, obviously would be great. Or, you know, if somehow it just turns into a really fun fight and let's say he wins a close fight, but it was a, you know, great fight and there was a lot of action, a lot of exchanges, you know, then that's good too. I mean, pretty much just come out with the W. The way that HBO is operating, it looks like that's enough that he'll get another chance, you know. I mean, they're putting him on the air for some reason. It's kind of not hard to imagine why, you know.
Yeah, no joke. Although, I mean, there was news today that I didn't even really, it was like 15, 20 minutes before the show started, so I didn't get to read the entire article. I read like the first paragraph, that it said that HBO wasn't going to be televising Gennady Golovkin's fight against Adama for whatever reason, so I didn't even really get to see why. But it kind of makes me wonder if perhaps they're kind of falling out of love again with K2 Promotions, the Klitschko brothers. So I don't know.
That's not what I read. I thought it was just some technical issues because it's in Monte Carlo and they would need to, you know,
but
set up the
televised fights from Monte Carlo before. So that's kind of what makes
venue,
me
though?
Wonder about it. But oh, I don't know. I don't know. In any event, I. Like I said, you obviously seem to know much more about it than
no,
me.
No, I don't know. I read the story, but it didn't sound like that. But who knows? I mean, I think they're pretty. They're you know, HBO's in bed with Golovkin. I mean, that you know, they had him at the award,
the Golden
Globe Awards and stuff. I mean, that he's there. They know that they've got a potential superstar in their hands with him. And that's again why I think it's so important that they need to push for some. You know, if you're HBO and you're looking at what you have, I mean, yeah, it's. They've got, you know, the top-ranked guys. But the real star power there, I mean, yeah, maybe someday a guy like Mikey Garcia can move up and wait and become a real player in the kind of the glamour, you know, the glamour divisions like 40 and 47. But they really have something with Golovkin, I think. And, you know, getting him, I mean, if he has to move up to fight Andre Ward or even at some point, you know, take on, you know, whoever comes out of the light heavyweights, I mean... You know, typically, I mean, that has been the easiest path for a fighter, you know, on the verge of superstardom, right? I mean, you move up in weight and you beat the top guys there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the next logical step.
There's nobody coming at 54, and it just seems kind of unlikely that, you know, I mean, how long will it take for him to get a Martinez? You stay at 60 for 3 years to wait for Martinez? I don't know. I mean, it sucks because he should be able to fight Martinez if it was a just world. But if not, I just think they got to move on this guy because Golovkin's already what, like 32?
Yeah,
he may have
young. I mean, he had
5 years left of his real, you know, physical prime, and I just think it's really important if HBO wants to develop. You know, he has more the star power. I mean, the funny accent, the way that he talks, and the way that he fights, the way that he just destroys people. I mean, that's,
are you serious?
Yeah.
You see what it is?
I would do everything like I could to try to somehow make the Andre Ward fight happen. Or, you know, Chavez and Golovkin. I mean, whatever. Just get him in there with somebody, you know, if not good, somebody big, so the guy can at least get a little bit more publicity, you know, because, I mean, Malinaji and Zab Judah are drawing 11,000 people, you know, and Golovkin's fighting in like 4,000-seat arenas, you know, Madison Square Garden Theater.
Yeah, for sure. And
not right.
I hope that they're able to push him a little bit better because, I mean, at the end of the day, he's a funny character and he's a good fighter. We've already seen him destroy a couple. Well, the level of opposition is lacking, but, you know, not because he doesn't want to fight the best fighters or anything, but we've already seen him destroy the level that he's at, so... Yeah, move along. I hope they push him. Let's see, what else is going on this weekend? Oh, that's right.
The Showtime
Peterson. Card. Yeah, Lamont Peterson comes back against Deary John. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't even really know how to call this fight because as far as Lamont Peterson goes, he's coming off the loss to Lucas Matisse in that, you know, in that fight, it really kind of opened our eyes to Matisse, to him being a really upper tier, you know, upper echelon fighter at 140 pounds. And so Lamont Peterson was basically ran right through and hasn't fought since. So I'm not really entirely sure exactly how he's going to come back from that type of loss, number one. And number two, for Deary John, I just haven't really been overly impressed with what I've seen from him. So I kind of have a feeling that it's a case of Lamont Peterson just being in a different class than him, but coming off that loss is kind of what makes it interesting. What are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting fight that obviously Deary John needs to win in order to, you know, validate himself as being like a real, you know, legitimate contender. I've thought that John looked good in certain fights. Like, he's had some kind of spectacular knockouts, if I remember right. But yeah, then other fights didn't, you know, looked okay, I guess. But he's undefeated, and he's looked decent enough to me that I think he may end up beating Lamont Peterson, you know, or at least giving him a really good fight. You know, you have to wonder where Peterson's head is at after the Matisse fight. I mean, he didn't take that much physical damage because it was stopped so quickly, and you know, just two or three huge punches. But it's not because of that weird glitch where they fought at the catch weight of 141. You know, Peterson's belt wasn't on the line. So I think Peterson still is like the IBF champion at 140. You know, that's not really the way you want to go into this title defense, right? Coming off of a, you know, just getting blown away in two rounds or three rounds or whatever. So I think it's a good interesting matchup that really could go either way. And unfortunately, you know, if Thierry Jean does go in there and just dominates Lamont Peterson, it'll probably be attributed as much to Peterson, you know, not being the same guy. And you know, which means it won't tell us as much about John as a fight like this you would hope for, because on paper that's kind of the intent, right? You know, undefeated prospect coming up against a pretty, you know, tough guy who's, you know, fought on even terms with some of the best fighters in the division and only has, you know, a couple of losses. But because of the nature of the last loss, I think it's going to be, you know, it's kind of questionable either way. Now, if Peterson beats John, especially if he does something kind of similar to what Peterson did against Kendall Holt, you know, if he really beats him up one-sided fashion, you know, or even TKOs him, which, you know, then I think that would confirm that Peterson's back and he's not, you know, yeah, he falls short of the guys like at the top, like Garcia and Matisse or whoever at 140, but I think he reestablishes himself as, you know, the next level of fighter and continues to be an interesting opponent for, you know, up-and-comers coming up who want to get to that top level. But I think we can say that Garcia is definitively beneath the Danny Garcias and Lucas Matisse's at 140, which means that if he can, you know, beat, you know, repel the threat from Thierry Jean, then he, you know, he is established as like the next best guy that, you know, a lot of fighters will want to beat to kind of prove that they belong on the next level.
Yeah.
And if he loses to Jean, I think it's fair to say that he's probably done as even like a top 10 contender.
Yeah, it's definitely a must-win fight in terms of, well, past losing to Lucas Matisse, which, needless to say, was damaging on a few levels, but past that, in the last, 18 months or so, maybe 2 years, Lamont Peterson has had to overcome other issues as well, I guess you could say PR issues, due to the whole testosterone pellet in the armpit, whatever thing, the test replay, I don't even remember. At this point, all of these PED issues start to kind of bleed together into the same story, and I can't remember who took what in their dick and who took what in their armpit and who took what in the fucking testosterone replacement hormone therapy clinic because they're anti-aging clinic shit. You know, I can't even remember anymore. But regardless, him testing positive, or at least admitting to using testosterone when he fought Amir Khan and all this type of stuff, this was a hit to his reputation. And, you know, I think maybe one of the best things for him to do to fix that was to not fight much in 2013. And he fought it, if I'm not mistaken, just that one time. So,
you're right.
I think that it's going to be big for him to come back from that as well. You know, to kind of rebuild his reputation, as it were. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that he's, you know, a lot of guys would have been treated a lot more harshly than Peterson was, and some, you know, because he's such a likable kind of working man's fighter, you know, never really given a huge promotional push and not really that flashy, but he found a way to compete in fights against the kind of A-side, like Victor Ortiz, you know, Amir Khan, who he was probably supposed to lose to, and he'd only ever lost, you know, Tim Bradley. So he'd had a good solid record. He was a good solid fighter, and also just a nice guy, and, you know, a pretty compelling backstory that, you know, you would sympathize with him there too. So I think that he came out of that PED thing pretty well, all things considered. You know, he took the year off. He kind of gave his explanation. I don't know all the details. I don't know really what to believe, but I think he was fine in terms of his image. I mean, when he came back and knocked out Kendall Holt, you know, a lot of people were really excited to see him fight Matisse, and he was viewed as like Matisse's, you know, biggest test, and Matisse, you know, the guy who would validate Matisse as being a real world class, you know, because Matisse didn't really have a win like that before. So I think that PED stuff's all behind him. I think now the question is, you know, he's going to prove himself as a fighter again. And, you know, this seems like a good guy to do that against. I mean, it makes sense, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm not 100% on whether it's really like a main event type of material, but regardless.
Well, no, I mean, it's not. It's Jermaine Taylor Showbox. You know,
yeah,
but
more or less.
It's all right. I mean, yeah, it's okay. You know, it's going to be a slow start to the year. There won't be really like, I mean, I can't think of anything I'm like really looking forward to until maybe March.
Yeah, it's looking a little bit bare right now. And you know what, though? I think that, you know, and I could be getting ahead of myself or kind of jumping the gun on this, but I think that it is possible that, you know, these stables are kind of running out. I mean, in 2013, there was no question that the whole Cold War or, you know, the Golden Boy versus Top Rank, you know, or by proxy HBO versus Showtime type of thing. There was no question that it wasn't good, but it didn't really affect the matchups that much because we still got a shitload of good fights. It was a really good year for boxing, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, that can't go on forever. Sooner or later, the stables are going to start thinning out no matter how heavy they are. So, you know, I think that that's part of it, but there's also been a couple, like, matchups that got snake bit and, you know, canceled or postponed and stuff like that, too. I guess we'll have to see exactly what shapes up.
Yeah, there's some good stuff on the calendar, but it's just not, you know, it's going to be like March, April, May when it'll start heating up. We'll see. I'm really curious who Danny Garcia is going to end up fighting next.
Well, the undercard bout of Lamont Peterson versus Deary Jean, I'm interested in it.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
It's not total top-level type of stuff necessarily, but I'm interested in seeing exactly how it's going to go.
I'm
mean,
down. I don't even still can't. I can't tell the Charlos apart yet, so, you know, hopefully we'll have one less of them after this weekend.
Yeah, they're twins. No, I mean, this Charlo, Jesus Christ, dude. Half the time I write it down. I always write it down, but I still like get at least the names mixed up. This one that's fighting this weekend is Jermell. So I think they do kind of have slightly different styles too. And I know that for a bit one had like braids or dreads and the other had kind of like a shorter hair. So like there was one way, but anyway, Gabe Rosado versus Jermell Charlo this weekend. Jermell Charlo, I think that like maybe about 2 years ago, up until about a year ago, he was seen as a pretty solid prospect overall, at least, you know, in my book he was. I remember seeing him, he stopped a guy named Dennis Duglin.
I remember that.
Dennis Duglin. It was like maybe, I can't even remember what card it was at this point, but I remember seeing him stop Dennis Duglin, and for whatever reason, not that Duglin was all that impressive himself, but it was an impressive stoppage. Like the way he stopped him, I was like, oh, maybe this guy is somebody to, you know, kind of look out for. And then his name's kind of started getting out there. But last year at... Oh, gosh, I think
is
it was Maidana
fought,
versus Lopez.
Antoine Smith? Or is
the no. Oh. No, this is the other one. The guy that fought Demetrius Hopkins.
Oh.
Demetrius Hopkins. Yeah, on the Maidana versus Lopez card. And it wound up being, just not a very good fight, partially because of Hopkins is, like, just a spoiler. But it wound up being just, like, not a very good fight. And I think that... I don't want to say like it killed his reputation or like really set him back or anything like that, because he won, but he just didn't really look very good doing it. And then that was, you know, over 6 months ago, and he's only fought once since. So he slowed down a little bit, but that also tends to happen when guys climb up the ladder and start fighting, you know, a higher level of opposition. But, you know, this is a fairly significant jump, I would say, because Gabe Rosado is, you know, if you look at his record on a piece of paper, his record it's not impressive. He doesn't have a shitload of knockouts. He's got, I think it's like 6 or 7 losses to like 20 wins. So his record doesn't look that impressive, but he's a gritty guy that comes to win when he fights, you know. So this is a pretty decent step up for Twin Charlo here. So I'm interested in the fight. I mean, how do you see it going?
I got to favor Rosado, to be honest. Just because of what I've seen, and like if I had reviewed it for a couple minutes, I mean, yeah, I could remember which Charlo was different, but I've just like haven't, you know, for the last year, I've just said, you know what, I'm not going to get to know which Charlo is who until one of them fights somebody decent. So like this is a good example. After Saturday, if Charlo wins, then I will say, okay, that's the one, you know, now I know who Jermall Charlo is. But from what I've seen from both Charlo brothers, I haven't been that impressed, man, to be honest. Like, yeah, you've seen flashes of, like, speed and power and some skill, but I just haven't seen anything to where either of them really distinguish themselves to me. And not like Rosado is, you know, some great fighter, but I think the guy's experience, I mean, just the fact that he's been in the ring with Golovkin and, you know, Peter Quillen, too, of the, you know, really, I mean, even though Quillen didn't look great in that fight, I mean, two of the best middleweights in the world, and he's now fighting basically a junior middleweight prospect who hasn't really fought, you know, Demetrius Hopkins. I mean, that's maybe one of his best opponents. So I think Rosado's going to have a decided edge in experience, and I like the style that he's been fighting since he's kind of been, you know, thrown in as the underdog. Having to fight. Rosado fought Jay Leon Love too, right? And that was like a weird controversial,
yeah,
either,
well,
draw.
First of all,
or...
he probably should have won.
Right.
First of
okay.
all. And second of all, after that, Love wound up testing positive for some diuretic or something.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, it was kind of a double whammy on him there. But
so
I think
Rosado, you got to favor Rosado, you know?
Yeah. I would agree. Well, I mean, you know, I'm not a huge Gabe Rosado fan by any means. I mean, I don't dislike him either, but, you know, he comes off a bit harsh, a bit brash. Sometimes he comes off in a way that kind of makes him somewhat unlikable, in my opinion. But inside the ring, he puts forth a good effort. You know, he's never really – I think that he could throw more a lot of the time, but it's not like he's fucking around or anything like that. He fights hard. But the issue was that, as I understand it, in the last few years, he's been taking a lot of fights on short notice, you know, not really having full training camps, fighting outside of his weight class as well. That's something else that a lot of people seem to be forgetting, is that, you know, he fought Gennady Golovkin, and he's not really a middleweight, you know, Gabe Rosado, that is, but he fought Golovkin anyway. He put forth a good effort in that one and really got the shit kicked out of him, but it wasn't going anywhere. They had to stop it. So he's obviously tough. And then in this fight, it really seems as though he's had a little bit more time to prepare. It seems like he's had a little bit more of a training camp. So I think that that's also going to help him, you know, the fact that he'll actually be able to take this fight a bit more seriously. And going in against Charlo, who is somewhat inexperienced in that regard, in, like you said, especially in comparison to where Gabe Rosado has been and what he's seen, yeah, you have to give the edge to him. I guess it's just really going to come down to exactly what type of fighter Charlo is. Although I will say this, if Charlo winds up winning, I'm going to go ahead and write an article on it called Charlo's in Charge. That's what I'm going to do.
As you should.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, you got to respect Rosado. I mean, as much of a, you know, douche that he may come across as at times, you know, with the sunglasses and pretty much everything about him outside of the ring. But, you know, you got to respect it. I mean, he's the only guy who really stood up to Golovkin and actually was stopped on his feet, you know, with a really bad cut, wasn't even knocked out. And, you know, gave Quillen a really tough fight, too. And I was all about Quillen, you know, and he, you know, whatever the reason, I mean, you have to credit Rosado. I mean, he made Quillen look pretty bad in parts of that fight. You know, Charlos have not done anything yet to really show that they can compete even with a guy on that level. So, but it's to me, it, you know, it is the right kind of fight. I think Rosado has earned, with just with his, you know, courageous efforts in defeat, I think he's earned the right to be considered, you know, a credible guy for, you know, Charlo to prove himself against. So it's a decent card. But like I said, there's nothing we've talked about today that I wouldn't miss to watch the Ortiz comeback. I mean, it's the return of the king.
No,
he told you he was going to come in to reclaim his crown, his welterweight crown, and this is the beginning.
I heard they're basically just going to lay out a slip and slide on the way to the ring and line it with his face lube, and he's going to come out face first right into the ring.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you what I heard, dude.
I heard he's going to come out wearing, like, instead of boxing trunks, he's going to have jeans with no shirt on, and he'll just have, like, you know, the basketball and the can of face lube, backwards hat. Kind of just
and
run
a
little, like,
around his neck.
Run a little homage to his commercial, and then
yeah,
the jeans will be, like, rip off.
Around his neck.
And then he'll be wearing his trunks and ready to fight.
Damn, that would be boss. I don't know if I could ever root against him. If he did that, I don't know if I could ever root against him, ever.
Ortiz is the best, man. That could actually turn out to be a good fight, because Ortiz is just so goofy. You know he's going to end up just, like, getting into some stupid shit, and then, you know, basically just start brawling with the guy.
Well, he's literally the only fighter alive who could win an Academy Award for starring in a porno. He's the only fighter alive that could say that. I guarantee it. Let the Academy see it. They'll
was he nominated for his role in Expendables 3? Best Supporting Actor?
I hope he was. He was nominated
in my dreams.
That
might not qualify until next year's. I heard he was amazing.
I don't know. He was nominated in my fantasy, I'll tell you that much. Expendables 3.
He
was not
he
expendable
is,
there.
He is something. He is literally a tree.
He is literally a tree.
Is there another fight on that Showtime card?
Oh,
there was.
I don't know. I didn't research that deeply.
Fuck.
I don't think so. If there is, I don't know. I don't know what it is if there is. But
well, I've got yeah. Tim Starks on the bat phone here.
Oh yeah.
Little Raphael chat reference. He says that that Mauricio Herrera is being floated for Danny Garcia's next opponent.
Yeah,
Showtime had a great year last year.
I read that
earlier. Not looking so good for 2014.
Yeah, I read about that earlier, and I'm okay.
That dude got smashed by Mike Alvarado and beat Provodnikov in that one fight.
Yeah, he put forth a really good effort.
No, he did look.
Alvarado.
I like
and
Herrera
it was a fun fight
as a fighter. He just Alvarado so much
yeah,
bigger.
Yeah, it was a fun fight.
Yeah,
not
it was a really fun
level.
Fight. It was a good.
Yeah, but
it was
not
a good
on
fight.
That level though.
But he doesn't deserve.
Well,
he doesn't deserve Danny.
No. Nobody's good enough for Danny.
I mean, good for him.
Nobody puts Danny in the
corner. Nobody.
Nobody. No, I mean, you're right, though, because he's a fun fighter to watch or whatever, but nothing that he's done in the recent past warrants a shot at the title at 140 pounds.
Well, how
Not
hard
right
are they
going
to sell that he beat Provodnikov, though, even though that was like 2 years ago and it was like a close, really close decision that could have actually gone either way? But
yeah,
now that Provodnikov's got a
close Friday night fights.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I'm sure. Well,
and now
that,
that's
sell?
How they'll be marketing. He's the only man to have beaten the. Oh, I guess Bradley beat him too. The only man who deserved to beat the beast, Provodnikov.
Well, as long as while they're trying to sell that, they at least mention Provodnikov's mother, then that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah. As long as there's a picture of her mom in the story, of his mom in
yeah,
the story.
Yeah, well then it's fine.
We're cool with it.
Yeah,
but
it's all good.
So what else is kind of funny is I read that the Pacquiao-Bradley 2 is finalized.
Yes.
And that's, you know, like we said before, I mean, it's a great fight. It's basically the two best guys at 147 behind Floyd. You know?
Yeah.
Obviously
that will never fight Floyd.
A rematch, but, and it, you know, it'd be nice to see, you know, either of them have a chance against Floyd, but I think you have to argue in terms of competitiveness and, you know, the quality of the, you know, both fighters and all, everything considered, it's kind of a better, more significant matchup than potentially if Mayweather fights Amir Khan. Because Khan has done nothing to, you know, as much respect as I have for Khan, and I think he's a really fun fighter, I just, it'd be nice if he just had, like, just one significant win, you know, since getting knocked out by Danny Garcia. And unfortunately, that hasn't happened.
Well, so, I would put it this way. Tim Bradley is a higher-level fighter at this point in time than Amir Khan.
You don't really need
to mince words. You know what I mean? So
not debatable.
Yeah, without question. It's I like it. You know, and we talked about this before, like when we had talked about in the last few weeks, or at least the last few shows that we've done, about who Manny Pacquiao should be fighting next. And, you know, there were, all of a sudden all these weird options started, you know, popping up here and there. But it really came down to, or at least to us, it came down to Bradley or Provodnikov. And I think that both of us would have been fine with either of those. But, yeah, as far as selling it because of the backstory and because of what had happened in the first fight, and then, you know, Manny deserves redemption for that or whatever, you know, however they're going to wind up selling it, that seemed to make the most sense. So I'm cool with it. I like the fight. I know a lot of people are like, Manny already beat him easily the first time, but I like it. I think that Tim Bradley has progressed enough as a fighter since the first fight that, yeah, I think that it could potentially be a different story this time around.
Yeah, I think it's a really good matchup, just in the sense, you know, you it's hard to go wrong when you basically just say, hey, this is the best fighter we have at 147, you know, from top ranks point of view, and this is the next best guy, and they're gonna fight each other again. You know, the first match was controversial. Bradley got, you know, endeared himself to the fans fighting the way he did against Provodnikov, and then got a really significant win against Marquez. So he really, you know, showed, hey, I'm back. I'm another crack at this level, because most of us at the time, you know, looked at the Pacquiao fight and just said, okay, Tim Bradley's just that hair short of being, you know, great world-class fighter. You know, he fought pound-for-pound elite, and he, in most of our eyes, lost. But I think this is a classic case of the guy's kind of, you know, he went out and did what he had to do to get back in the position to you know, prove everybody wrong and by decisively beating Pacquiao, which I think he needs to do. And, you know, I think it's interesting because I think Top Rank could have kind of avoided making this rematch right now, because right now those are kind of like two of their like biggest guys. I mean, obviously Pacquiao is like their only real pay-per-view star, but Bradley's like now not because of the first fight with Pacquiao, but because of, you know, what he did against Provodnikov and then beating Marquez coming off the biggest win of his career. You know, Bradley kind of established himself as, like, Top Rank's, like, young, you know, potential guy. And so to me it's interesting that they're making this fight right away, because I think the loser will be hurt significantly in terms of, like, financial cachet going forward. I mean, I don't think Pacquiao loses to Bradley, and this time it's, like, legit, and we're all say Bradley won. Pacquiao's basically done. I mean, all Pacquiao's got then is maybe the hope that Marquez gives him a rematch. You know, if Bradley loses to Pacquiao, then it's the same story before. Like, Bradley's just not on that level, you know, and he beat Marquez because it was a style thing, but he went life and death with Provodnikov, and, you know, now Pacquiao's basically beaten him twice. So, I mean, I think it really hurts the loser of this fight going forward. I mean, they can't, you know, whereas if they had kind of avoided doing this, and I don't know how, but maybe, you have Pacquiao fight somebody else and you put Bradley in, you know, then, you know, maybe you could either build it up bigger or use them to kind of like leverage, you know, something else. But putting them right into each other, it's like you're kind of, you know, the loser of this rematch, I think, as in terms of pay-per-view going forward, you know, they're done. I mean, Pacquiao will always be a star, but you know, it's kind of like...
Well, I don't know that Tim Bradley would necessarily be done, but it would definitely be a big hit to his career, needless to say, especially if he were to get stopped. I mean, I don't know that I see that happening at this point, but
yeah, it would be a blow to his career for sure.
I think it'd be a big blow, man. Especially because, you know, people will also say, like, well, and it's not even the best version of Pacquiao. It's the Pacquiao who had already been knocked out by Marquez, and you know.
Yeah.
Is older, no, 35 or 36. I mean, if Bradley's going to step up and become like, the thing is, like, right now, because of what he did against Marquez, Bradley's considered one of the best fighters in the whole sport. You know, if you look on any pound-for-pound list, I mean, we fucking hate pound-for-pound lists, but, you know, if you did happen to, you know, look at one, he's considered a number, you know, top five pound-for-pound guy because of, you know, what he's done on, the like, this high level and beating Marquez. That's really the you know, the fight that did it. He's in a great position right now because you could also make the argument of, like, Mayweather should fight Bradley. Bradley's the number two guy. You know, you can make that claim as long as Bradley's still undefeated and he has these nice wins. But if you put him back in with Pacquiao, you know, against the fighter who most of us thought he lost to, I think you're risking a lot for him, you know, in terms of his, like, economic viability. I mean, yeah, he can lose to Pacquiao and still be a really good fighter and still, you know, beat some good fighters and be a relevant part of that mix. But I think in terms of, like, you know, pay-per-view stardom or really becoming, like, an A-side, like a draw type of guy, I mean, I think that's all kind of out the window if he loses to Manny again. I mean, you can't make the argument then that, like, oh, he should get, you know, people can conveniently say, like, oh, Mayweather should fight Bradley. Bradley's undefeated. He's the best young American fighter. He's got wins on paper over Pacquiao and Marquez. You know, you can't say that if Manny comes back and beats him.
That's true. No, I mean, that's true. And, I mean, he's kind of,
I mean, it'll get the drumbeat going for Pacquiao Mayweather again, but that's not realistic. So then where does Manny go? Then Manny wants to try to fight Marquez, and Marquez won't do it, and nobody has anything. You know, and then they make Pacquiao Bradley 3. I don't know.
And I don't mean to suggest that Tim Bradley's a manufactured fighter in any way, because I'm a fan and I like him, and he's not a manufactured fighter. He's a real fighter, but he has gotten a bit of mileage off of some asterisks, you know, like he has been able to turn what was basically a friggin' disaster against Pacquiao into now, you know, he beat Juan Manuel Marquez, who knocked Pacquiao out, and now he's, you know, sitting relatively pretty, especially if he gets the Pacquiao rematch, because, you know, I don't mean to suggest that that's going to be a huge fight or anything like that, but if you're fighting Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather, you're getting paid well. So, yeah, he did kind of bring himself from the brink of, real disaster there. But, a tough loss in this position, I agree, would be hard on his career. And for the thousands of people listening around the world, since James actually uttered the term pound for pound, he's got to make like those Yakuza movies and actually chop off his pinky after the show. So you might want to stick around for his tweeting afterwards, everybody. Just saying.
Do not speak of those things.
Nope. We do not mention that term.
And dude, don't get me wrong. I love the fight because that's what it's all about, is high stakes. You know, it's like loser, the winner's going to have big things to look forward to, hopefully. Although when you actually start looking at it, you do kind of wonder, wait, well, who is the winner going to fight next anyway? Because Marquez maybe doesn't want to fight Pacquiao again, or he's retired, or what? And is there even that much interest in Marquez rematching, you know, Bradley? Or, you know, the winner is going to be the guy who they'll all say that, you know, Mayweather should fight, and they will be the clear number two contender to Mayweather, but that might not, you know, that's probably not going to happen. But it's just, I don't know, it's just interesting to me that they, you know, Top Rank's kind of putting all of its marbles into this Bradley and Pacquiao fight, and the winner should be in great position, theoretically, but I just think that the loser is going to be, and that's awesome. I mean, that's drama. I guess the only reason I'm like, it's because I really like both guys. I'd like to have some kind of scenario where both of them could keep winning and not have to fight each other again, because Bradley got really, really, you know, kind of lucky, I mean, to get the decision against Pacquiao, and then he really, you know, earned it by kind of, you know, walking through the fire against Provodnikov and beating Marquez. I mean, it's great, but he is kind of fortunate to still be, you know, on paper 30-0 right now. And the longer that Pacquiao decision, you know, goes into the past, it's like after Pacquiao got knocked out by Marquez, you kept hearing, like, Pacquiao's lost two fights in a row now. He's done. You know, and even Mayweather, I remember at the time, Mayweather was like, complaining about Vegas judges and saying, you know, look at what they did to Pacquiao against Bradley. Oh, but I didn't see the fight, but I heard about it or whatever, you know. But everyone pretty much acknowledging, like, Bradley, you know, Pacquiao should have gotten that decision. But then recently, I've seen Mayweather saying, like, I got to fight Tim Bradley's leftovers, you know, and Pacquiao. And it's like, because, you know, the longer that goes into the past, the easier it'll be to say, like, and Bradley beat Pacquiao, you know, and just cite it like it was, like, a legitimate win. So I just think Bradley's in this awesome position right now where he could just chill out and, you know, who knows, maybe he becomes a desirable opponent for Miguel Cotto or, you know, I mean, he might just, things might open up for him where he could kind of maintain his undefeated record and not have to risk it all right now in another really big high-stakes match. But that's what he's going to do, you know, if he fights Pacquiao. And, you know, like we said, I mean, for Pac, I mean, you've got to win this fight if you want to keep at it. I mean, has to, right? I mean, you can't regard Pacquiao as a world-class, you know, real world-class fighter anymore if he loses again.
Well, on paper, that will have made him, what, 1-3 in his last four if he loses? So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously the one of those losses is, you know, kind of shiesty one to Tim Bradley the first time. But I will say this, if Tim Bradley does legitimately win, I think that he would be more likely to really push the issue to fight Floyd Mayweather, and also Top Rank would probably be more likely to be like, you know, whatever, that's fine. You know, we'll make a couple bucks off it, and it ain't like we're conceding anything with Manny Pacquiao anymore, so yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, they would.
So
need
I don't know. I'm not sure if that would happen, but it
just fascinates me, man, because, like, if I was either of those guys, I wouldn't be that eager to, like, revisit this fight so quickly now. You know, Pacquiao's just reestablished himself by beating Rios, and, you know, Bradley, even though he beat him pretty easily in my eyes, you know, Bradley is still a tough, really tough young and improving fighter who's never going to be more confident than when he steps into that ring. And if I was Manny, I would just be happy that, like, everyone thinks that I beat him already. I'm not going to take that right away. I mean, anybody would want to fight Pacquiao because he's still, you know, even if Rios' fight was a dud and it did 350,000 pay-per-views, there's only a few fighters who can even do that number. You know, so Pacquiao could have his pick of, I mean, fuck, if he wanted to fight Gamboa or somebody, you know, he could do that. I mean, he could really fight whoever he wants, and there'll still be a, you know, loyal contingent fan base that'll get him, like, a couple hundred thousand pay-per-views. You know, is the Bradley fight going to be that much bigger? I mean, yeah, it'll be bigger than something like Gamboa. It'll be bigger than the Rios. How big will it be? That's a mystery. You know, it could be 700, 800, like what the first fight did, or it could be less. So I don't know. It's just, to me, it's a big gamble, you know. And if I was Bradley, I'd be just be happy with the win on paper. You just fought three really tough fights in terms of, you know, they weren't all wars like Provodnikov, but three really good opponents. I might just chill out and just, you know, if they can let fucking Mikey Garcia fight, you know, Burgos and Rocky Martinez. I mean, Golovkin fight the guys he's fighting. Why not give Timmy
Bradley
some easy?
But that's not the type of dude he is. That's why I like him. That guy, he is a ballsy son of a bitch. You know, he's up for it.
It's just two guys that I really like, you know, and I just feel like whoever loses this fight, it's going to set him back, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, it will. Well, you know, one small thing to kind of close it out, if I may. You know, if Tim Bradley would have lost that decision to Pacquiao in the first fight, everybody would be talking about what a tough son of a bitch he is. You know, he fought through the fight with, like, a broken ankle and a fractured this or another. And, you know, he lasted the distance with Manny Pacquiao despite getting rocked around all over the place, you know, stuff like that. If he hadn't have gotten that decision, that's pretty much what everybody would be saying. And so, you know, I mean, he did get the decision, and I'm not saying we need to forget that happened or something. I'm just saying that this is that guy. This is who he is, and it kind of sucks that he doesn't have more fans than he does, because the guy's really willing to fight whomever. And on top of that, he's willing to obviously step in there with a guy like Provodnikov and swing. You know, he's a ballsy dude.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You make a good point. Like, let's say if Pacquiao does beat Bradley still can fight. You know, he can rematch Provodnikov. I mean, that was such a great fight. We'd all love to see that again. You know, if Marquez is serious, Marquez seems like he wants to avenge against Bradley. Like, he's not interested in fighting Pacquiao, but he wants to because Bradley beat him. So he'd have that for him. So he could still have other good fights. And if he won those again, it might turn into one of those things. Well, oh, he just always would struggle with Pacquiao's style, you know. But it's not like, it doesn't mean he's not like in his own right great. He can still get there, but it just, I think it'll be kind of a setback, you know. And for Manny, I mean, I really do think if Manny loses a decision to Bradley now, I just think he's done on that. On the level that he's been, he's done. He can still fight. He can still, you know, can be a successful, you know, financially. And who knows, maybe someday he does end up at Golden Boy and if he fights Mayweather, and it's just a huge fight on name recognition, you know. If he can't do at least what he did the first time against Bradley, then, you know, I think any remaining clamor that there might be for you know, a Mayweather fight or any kind of regarding of Pacquiao as still one of the best fighters in the whole sport, I think that's going to be done.
For sure. Well, dude, we have like less than 5 minutes, and really quick before we go. So they kicked off the proceedings for Canelo versus Alfredo Angulo today. What are you thinking about that fight? I gotta know.
I'm kind of loving it. I think it's going to be a really good fight. I think the whole card looks decent. But pay-per-view, I'm, you know, probably stream that shit. But I think it's a really good comeback fight for Canelo. You know, like, I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago when it was just rumored, but I think it's perfect for him, you know? I mean, I think Angulo is a totally credible fighter. You can't say Canelo's coming back in time. I mean, fucking, you know, I know Canelo didn't get knocked out, but look at Amir Khan after getting, but Danny Garcia, he takes like a year off and then fights the other Carlos Molina, the lightweight guy. And now he's going to get a fight with, you know, and then he fights Tulio Diaz, and now he's going to get a fight with Mayweather. I mean, you know, Canelo's coming back, and he's taking on a really dangerous, the guy who most people consider the best fighter in the division up there, Arislandi Lara, you know, at least if Mayweather's not campaigning at 154. You know, look at the fight that Angulo gave to Lara. I mean, gave him the toughest fight of his career, broke his, you know, knocked him down twice, had him badly hurt. I mean, his form of pressure, it's not entirely, you know, crude. It's not like, I mean, he is a really solid, I think, you know, aggressive pressure fighter who has power, who can, you know, give Canelo a lot of trouble if Canelo's not on his best game. So, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for Canelo to, you know, reestablish himself, and I think it is a genuine risk to fight somebody like Angulo. I mean, I think there's question marks about Angulo because of the way his fight with Lara ended, and, you know, with his eye, the injury being as like grotesque as it was, and it looking like his, you know, orbital bone smashed. Although I think we actually said a couple weeks ago that it there was not actually a break, which is good, and that's partly why he's been able to get back and recover, you know, to fight so soon.
Yeah.
But dude, overall, a total thumbs up for me on this. I mean, I think it's just the kind of fight that Canelo needed to do to, you know. Because the whole idea of, like, wow, he got shut out by Mayweather. Now they're trying to put him on pay-per-view and make him, you know, continue on with this, you know, he's the next superstar kind of storyline. Well, you know, this is the kind of fight that they needed to do to continue that, you know. And there's a good chance that Canelo could look awesome, and it could be really exciting, and he could, you know, get some kind of spectacular TKO or something like that. There's also a chance he could be in genuine, you know, danger if he, you know, isn't, you know, at his sharpest, and, you know, that'll be really exciting to watch. So
I mean to me the only question is whether or not Angulo is going to be able to force Canelo to trade more than he wants to, because I mean we've already kind of put to bed the idea that Canelo's a really aggressive guy. But yeah, I think it'll be fun, and it's the right fight at the right time, you know, in his career, I agree. So, I don't know. I'm not really sure exactly which way to go yet, but I'd have to give Canelo the edge for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same boat. You know, I think you slightly favor Canelo, but there's just a lot of intrigue, and Angulo has, you know, he's been there before. He's fought really good fighters, and although he's lost, I think that still gives you confidence. I mean, if you can do it, you can do against Lara, he has to believe that he can, you know, catch Canelo.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we got like 45 seconds left. I'm glad that you made your triumphant return.
All right, dude. Awesome. Thank you, man.
Everybody, thank you for tuning in. I know we pushed a lot of stuff into those 2 hours, but we'll be back next week, and hopefully we'll have more stuff to recap, and stuff will be good this weekend. So check out James's articles on Bad Left Hook, and check out my stuff on Queensberry Rules. Thank you very much, everybody. Take it easy.